Thanks, Mark. There's been a couple changes this year in talking about cross-breeding DDs and so on. And with some of those changes, we kind of have a question about how we're continuing with our germplasm violation program and what exactly we're doing and what sorts of breed relationships are falling out of that. So I kind of want to cover several areas of that with this right now and then look over some differences on what we get depending on which amounts of data we use and whether we kind of look at our whole GP database or just some of the newer data that we've gotten from the new GP. So with this, I'd be remiss if I don't recognize my colleagues, Lawrence Milling and Mark Coleman, who've continued to work with Larry Cundiff back here in the audience to try to keep the germplasm evaluation going and keep it strong for our breed and genomic resource. So I think most of you in the room are pretty familiar now with the cross-breed EPD system. This has been around for a long time now, and really 20th anniversary, I guess. I didn't think about that until now. So that's pretty cool. And it says that this has had a lot of impact in the industry, been pretty useful, I think. We want to keep trying to make the system better overall. We use it to account for differences in the EPD base and genetic evaluations of each breed, and it uses our germplasm evaluation really to get an estimate of the differences between breeds so we know what kind of adjustments to make to that base, those different bases. I just want to look back at the history. This is prior to the stage that we're in now in the GP. This is sort of what's happened in GP up until the early 2000s. And at that time, GP was divided into distinct cycles, eight different cycles in this case, usually evaluating somewhere between six and eight or nine breeds at a time. And at the time, it was really used to evaluate exotic germplasm coming in the United States to see what their place was in the industry relative to the Hereford, Angus, and Shorthorn base we were used to at the time. Okay, so that's the database we're working with for cross-breed EPDs. As most of you know, we're concentrating on national cattle evaluation breeds, and that have these 36 or so breeds are here. That ends up being 18 different breeds. Since then, and I'll cover this more later, a lot of our data has actually come post-2002 with a new stage of GP that we call continuous GP. And in that case, we're actually trying to evaluate all 18 of the largest beef cattle breeds that have genetic evaluation simultaneously. And these are the ones we typically use in the cross-breed PD program. Okay. The factors are pretty simple, really, relatively to compute. We basically just derive breed differences. I'll show you how we do that in a minute exactly, but breed differences through our GP data. And I'll explain where these come from here in the next couple of slides. But we adjust them to a 2011 base because that's sort of the year that all the yearling weights and so forth have been turned in with the breed associations already. As of 2013, we had most of the yearling and carcass data in. So we adjust breed differences to that period of time and then calculate the base difference in the EPDs just by subtracting and converting to an Angus base on the EPDs themselves. So basically what we're asking for here is how much different in 2011 is our breed I from Angus relative to how much different the EPD average in 2011 is from Angus EPD average in 2011. And that's really where these factors come from. And this is the table for this year. If you've seen, if anybody's hit on email today and got Beef Magazine, you'll see that these came out in the Beef Cow Calf Weekly right now. We'll have this all over the place shortly on the Beef Improvement Federation website, on the MARC website, several of the breed association journals. What is a little different and what we need to talk about just a little bit this year is we did have three of the larger breeds on this join into multi-breed evaluation and try to get onto the same base this year right now. And I actually meant to draw in some lines here and forgot to do that, Mark. That was good, right? sorry about that. And I see I'm underlying all the things that Microsoft Word thinks are misspelling, too, so that makes it even more complicated. So, sorry about that. Think the second line from the bottom, the Simmental, the breed association that's actually developing the multi-breed evaluation in partnership then with Red Angus and with Gilpie. Okay? And their goal this year was to try to get onto the same base, which means that these adjustment factors should be relatively the same this year. And what we're seeing right now when we look at it is that's pretty good for birth weight, where we have 3.4, 2.7, and 3.7. I would call that the same, accounting for the error that we have in our own estimates of breed differences at the Meat Animal Research Center. We're starting to see some changes in that right now, and this is not a right-wrong thing. It's just different in our data relative to what was used to calibrate the breed differences in that multi-breed evaluation right now, where I'd say Red Angus and Gelby in weaning weight and yearling weight both, right here and right here, are fairly similar to each other in that base, and that for some reason Simmental would be being discounted a little bit more in their multi-breed evaluation right now, so they don't have as much of a factor. Okay, that's pretty good, I think, overall, and what we'd like to do is just look at this a little bit. I'll be talking to some of the breed association reps after this and see where our differences are and what we can do to help with that process. As I said, this is not a right-wrong thing. This is just looking at it overall and seeing where the calibration sort of can go forward with this right now. Milk, again, I wouldn't... Milk is a little bit harder anyway, but I wouldn't call it terribly different between the three breeds. It's within well under 5 pounds difference. And when we get to carcass traits, which I would call a little bit harder to do correctly in this because there's not much information both from our database and from what's external to the Meow Research Center database, and there's not as much information on breed differences overall out there. But we kind of have a reverse in this case where, in general, the Simmental and the Gelby look more like they're on the same base, I say, than the Red Angus. In this case, okay. So I don't want to dwell on that too much. It's just an interesting thing to look at this year, and I think we kind of want to go through some iterations and think about this. So think about what's different. And as I said, I'm not saying that all the data that we're using to derive our mark differences is completely the right data, and I'll get into a little bit where some changes actually can occur depending on what we want to look at in our own U.S. mark data. So I mentioned I'd talk about where we derive those breed differences from. Most of you have seen this before, but basically we get a statistically modeled, actually genetic group effect estimate of the breed difference divided by 2 would be a breed of sire difference. And that's what this is here, is the U.S. mark breed of sire difference that we get from our whole database, the GPE, divided by a scaling factor that accounts for the environment being different in mark to the general industry. So, for instance, for weaning weight, this is a number that's somewhere around 0.87 or so, somewhere in that range, meaning that our differences we see in mark and weaning weight are actually smaller than the differences we'd expect to see in field populations, and part of that is because often at mark we would early wean, and so we don't have as much of a variance spread at mark. And then we adjust that for the difference again in the current EPD 2011 for the breed itself, and the EPD average that we get from how much of the bulls that we have affect affect the phenotypes that we have at farm. Okay? That gets to this table we usually see and goes into breed differences and so forth, and I'm not going to spend much time on this at all, other than we'll look through some of those figures we generally see and that we've presented before and published in our annual book, like right here. And this is just an idea based on the genetic trends and accounting for these crossbreed EPDs on what's been going on with those breeds over a period of 30 years for most of these growth rates and so forth. And without going too deep into this, you'll see that a lot of breeds generally stabilize their birth weight. They range all over the board on what their actual birth weight probably is. I would mention that Brahman is unfairly a bit discounted because they're being bred to Taurus breeds in general in GPE, and that seems to create an effect which has a larger birth weight than if they were bred to Indicus females, which seem to reduce birth weight in that mating. But other than that, you see generally breeds are trying to maintain their birth weight. With those relative differences, most breeds are trying to increase their weaning weights overall. And we talked about some of this in the main session in that presentation. Yearling weights even more extreme, to where you can see Angus has gotten really, really very high relative to most of the other breeds in the evaluation when they started out for much smaller back in the early stages of genetic evaluation, and have put the most pressure on growth over time. I don't think that's a surprise with what we saw either in the main session. And milk would be similar, to where some breeds are maintaining, some breeds are definitely increasing in milk, and asking what the optimal level of that, I think, is quite applicable that we talked about in the main session. So given that, I mentioned before that this is based on the whole GPE database that we have right now, all of that we have from 1970 through our current continuous GPE site or GPE program that we have right now. And we've been asked before, well, you know, are you putting too much weight on the old bulls in the system that you've had, that you sampled in the 1970s or 1960s, relative to what the bulls that we've been giving you to sample in our breed today? And part of the reason, honestly, that we started resampling the breeds in the germplasm evaluation program was to make sure that we were doing a good job of keeping our breed differences relevant. So it's a fair question. Those old bulls, we think we do a pretty good job of that, but it's based on the EPDs that we are actually getting from those bulls, and I'll talk about that in a minute. Those EPDs that are coming from the genetic evaluation systems of each breed association, okay? So basically, the question is, then, are we biasing the current breed differences by using these older bulls, and should we be using just the newer data to estimate in the crossbreed EPD program and our breed differences that are the main product out of that we use out of that? Just in terms of these older bulls, what we're really relying on are two things, and I put genetic trend in here. We're relying on the breeds having an accurate estimate of their genetic trend, and thereby, really, we need genetic connectedness to connect between those old bulls and those new bulls, and to be sure that those old EPDs are reliable enough for us to base our breed differences on that we're adjusting to. I hope that makes sense, but we need those old EPDs. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, well, in this case, it's just older relative to the germplasm evaluation.
So it's bulls from the 70s and 80s?
Primarily. If we go back to that original figure, and I don't want to go back and forth through a bunch of slides and make everybody dizzy, but if we go back to that old figure, when we really evaluated most of those continental breeds, was kind of in cycle 1, 2, and 3, with a few that spilled over into cycle 4. And those would be 1960s, 1970s germplasm primarily. Okay, so we're talking the early stages of genetic evaluation. We're talking some bulls that didn't get used a whole lot after we sampled them necessarily. And so they, in many cases, they wouldn't have been as highly accurate as what we are trying to sample today. In general, we're now, for those of you that aren't aware, and for those of you that are producers that haven't been called, look out because we might call you sometime, but what we're trying to do right now is sample highly influential, accurate breed bulls into that continuous GP now. Okay, does that help, Don?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a relative term. It's just sort of in the life cycle of GPD. And I used, I sort of showed before, but I didn't go into the detail, is that we weight those EPDs by their influence on all the phenotypes in the whole breed. So there's actually a fair amount of weighting, especially in Hereford and Angus, that have been through this whole cycle on several bulls that are older than this current sample. Okay? So if we want to look at this, we can address some of this by looking just at our new GP data and isolating that from the other one. And I'd be remiss to say, really, this is what's been done with the GP, if I didn't say this is what's been done with the GP cycles the whole time. Basically, we go through a couple years of data, get about 100 progeny, or 100 male and female progeny each, 200 progeny born from each breed, and then write up a summary of what those breed differences were as we went. And really, it's just genetic evaluation program that's allowed us to use those because of those EPDs and the sires in this program, in this cross-breed EPD program. But if we look at just our recent sampling, that entails this continuous evaluation of GPD that I'm talking about. And that really initiated in 2006 with new sires. We basically went from a shift of looking at exotic germplasm to looking at influential breeds and began resampling 14 of the 18 breeds in 2006 and 7. We added Brangus and Beefmaster in 2008 and 9. The reason they weren't added here is because they were more recently sampled in cycle 8, the last cycle of GPE, the last true cycle. And then we added South Devon and Tarantay, the only two breeds that weren't represented on the cross-breed program in 2011. Okay. This is a slightly outdated slide, but a look at what our goal is with this continuous GPE, just so you can kind of see that if you haven't seen it before. What we're really trying to do, and we're about halfway through this process, is grade up using AI sires, cows on center, so that we end up with 7/8 or higher purebred cows as about half of the GP population. And we think we'll do a better job with several things that are directly beneficial here beyond just breed differences, including diversity for genomic applications, specific heterosis estimation, and things like that. But that's our goal, and generally, seed stock producers that have us use bulls don't mind seeing breeds that kind of cows that kind of look like their breed either when they come out. So there's that added byproduct as well. We're trying to get somewhere, if GP is somewhere around 3,000 cows, give or take, we'd be trying to get about half or 1,500 to be purebred or nearly purebred, 7/8 or higher cows. The rest would be cows that are F1 are used through matings, or F1 cows mated through purebred or bulls, or some cows mated through F1 bulls to produce F1 squirts down here. Okay, and don't worry too much about what all that means, other than it just helps us to build a whole dial for things like heterosis estimation in terms of maternal and individual heterosis. And it also helps us to really get that genomic diversity segregated, at least under traditional linkage approaches. This is where we're at right now in that GP process. We've actually produced quite a lot in just a few years. We did have an extra boost in this purebred column from several of these breeds that actually we had some commercial cows on center already. So that's why these are here and they sort of count and they sort of don't as a result because we already have the cows available. But we're actually producing 7/8 or higher in almost all of our breeds right now. You'll notice Brahman's missing, and we don't think a purebred Brahman's going to do too well in the winter at Clay Center right now, so we're not going that far. But we're basically trying to stop them at around half bloods with a few three-quarter bloods produced in our when the half bloods are hit first. Okay. So we're getting to a stage where if we think about, I said earlier that traditional cycles usually have around 200 progeny of each breed. We're there. And so we're at a good place to start summarizing this right now anyway, at least for these early weaning, pre-weaning traits. So this is where we're at. What I'm going to show you are a bunch of tables then for the cross-breed EPE traits and how they compare then to the cumulative GPE data that I kind of showed earlier and that those figures that you've all seen are based on. We use the same animal model analysis that we use in a typical cross-breed EPE program to estimate breed differences and to adjust for sire EPEs. The results are shown relative to Angus, so this is just going to be a breed of sire difference, and Angus will be zero for that, and the other breed will be deviations then for Angus. And I want to emphasize right now that these results are preliminary, so please don't take these to the bank yet. They're going to change. I've been hiding in a corner for the past few days at this and another meeting last week trying to get this all done. So there's some things that are probably here still to look at. I think it's pretty good, but things are going to change. So don't run to the bank with these yet, but I think it provides us an interesting picture. And the first trait then is birth weight. And actually, I don't see a lot of real surprises here. We've got a couple pounds. This is my layout here. This is the breed difference that we have in new GPE using just that continuous GPE program. And this is what we have if we use the whole cumulative GPE database. Okay, this would be the ones that are used to make Table 2 in the press release that I showed earlier. Okay. And so the differences then between new GPEs, difference to Angus, difference in differences, and differences based on cumulative GPE are then in this column. So this is just the subtraction of one column from the other. And what I'm trying to look at then really to evaluate this is how well does new GPE reflect using the whole cumulative GPE data set. And I think it's pretty good in birth weight. These are well within sort of noise ranges. A few go up a little bit or down. I realize a pound or two can be a fair bit of EP, but this is well within noise on birth weight. Okay. What I'm going to do going forward now here is I'm going to highlight the ones that, in general, most of these do pretty well through all of these traits, but there's a few breed lines where we seem to see some differences. Okay, right now, and I'm going to go through as we go through traits, and rather than highlight the whole thing, talk about the ones where I'm seeing differences in levels of estimation in the new GPE versus cumulative. And what I see here, Hereford is a little bit smaller, a fair bit smaller in the weaning weight right now based on new GPE and based on the sampling of new bulls relative to the cumulative GPE. We see the same thing for Charlet, and then we see a little bit smaller for Gilvie as well. And, you know, right now in all three of these breeds, and I want to point this out right now, there's one cycle of GPE that I excluded from this, but that's very relevant, and that is cycle 7 when all of these larger breed associations were sampled again, the Hereford Angus, Red Angus, Gilvie, Limousine, Simmental, and Charolais. And in that case, and we saw it with some of the weights in there, some of these breeds actually had gone up quite a bit in mean weight and yearling weight. And perhaps that contributed, if we look at the cycle 7 and new GPE together for all those breeds except for Hereford and Angus, that contributed a very large portion of the data that we actually used to look at breed differences for those breeds. And so actually, I think some of this change that we're seeing, particularly in Gilvie and Charolais, is the exclusion of the cycle 7 data. And I'm kind of torn right now going forward on whether that should be weighted as high as new GPE or not. That's a sample of 1990s bulls, whereas new GPE would be a sample of 2000s bulls. Okay? I see something a little similar in Yearling Weight. Again, most of these are pretty well within the margin of error that I kind of expect. So I'm kind of under 10 pounds because standard errors are getting higher as we get a larger mean for traits overall. Charolais, again, took a drop, and Solaire, who had only been sampled one other time, took a little bit of a drop, and we're actually probably a little over half the data for Solaire and AGP. So that one doesn't surprise me as much. A similar situation actually occurs in Shorthorn. So other than these are data dominated by new data that hasn't been really updated for probably about 20 years. And then Charolais, again, I think it's a cycle 7 issue a little bit. Okay. Beyond that, now we're going to get into the sets of traits where we actually have a lot less data in new GPE just because it takes longer to record the data. We don't have that many producing females now, so we don't have that many real good estimates in new GPE of milk. And then carcass data, we have a lot of the calves, a year's worth less of calves that are on the ground right now instead of slaughtered, so we don't have the carcass data from those born in 2012, and of course half as much data just because we don't slaughter the females. Okay, so these are highly tentative. I debated whether to include them at all, but I wouldn't take a lot from the milk right now because we're dealing with, I don't know, somewhere around probably somewhere around 50 cows per breed average or something like that in UGP right now. I think we've got a lot of time we need to think about here. This is fitted simultaneously to wean weight, and that also adds a little bit of a complication because of how well the maternal milk is probably estimated as a result. Okay. Given that, all of that, if we did go higher at all, I think it's actually in milk more because Angus is a little bit lower estimated for milk in the new GPE rather than compared to the cumulative GPE. And I realize they both say zero, but if Angus goes down, everything else has to kind of go up because we're looking doing this as a deviation from Angus. And I think that's what we're seeing a lot right here is some change between 5 and 15 pounds for most of the breeds of milk for what we're seeing in Angus. On the carcass traits, there's not a whole lot. I would say that's a very big change, honestly. There's a little bit, maybe you could argue, in Hereford and Maine, but they're not that large relative to the standard error. Again, those are the only two that are large at all. So that's similar. Ribeye, again, I think we have something sort of like what we had with milk, where Angus seemed to have changed a little bit and is probably a little bit more lowly estimated relative to the other breeds in UGP relative to the cumulative. Again, there's not necessarily a lot of data in this yet, but I think as a result, all of the breeds in general have a positive difference from Angus for the most part, and I think that's more of an Angus change than a change for the breeds themselves. Fat, I just don't see a lot here to get super excited about differences on necessarily. So, but that's kind of where it is right now. Why are we seeing these differences are right now? Well, the EPDs on the bulls not accounting for differences in sampling between old cycles of GP and new sampling. That's what I kind of hinted at before. How well is the genetic trend really tying those two sources of data together? And are they really connected? Do they have enough connectedness between some of those old bulls and some of the new bulls right now? That said, you know, I was picking out a few lines on each slide. A lot of it isn't all that different. Okay, so I'm not saying to throw away all of old GP yet, and the stuff that we published and sent out this year is still based on the whole thing, but this is something that we all want to keep looking at a little bit. Cycle 7 is not included. I do think actually some of those changes would moderate even more if we included the Cycle 7 data now. And that's a lot more likely to be highly connected. A lot of that sample was highly influential bulls. Approximately half, I believe, Larry, were pretty highly influential bulls in Cycle 7. And so I think we could pretty safely look at another analysis where that's included, and I think we might see some of those changes go away even further. Error structure of breed differences, there's a natural level of standard error with this estimation anyway, and it's kind of what I was getting at when we talked about a crossbreed EPD adjustment factors before. And, I said basically Gelby and Simmental and Red Angus were all the same at the beginning of the birth weight, even though they weren't exactly the same, and that's just a function of the standard type of error you'd expect to see when you're estimating breed differences. It's just statistical error. We need to look at this further, and it's something we'll be trying to do and communicate more with the multi-breed evaluation at the same time. I want to close because we've had a lot of topics of discussion about mature weight, and we actually did a little bit of a talk about this at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Cattlemen's College a couple of years ago, talking about where we're at with the large weights that are going on, and because of the implications of large weights of cows on maintenance energy requirements and so forth. And this is very timely with what we've been talking about in the main sessions of BIF this year. So I think we need to keep abreast of where we're at in terms of breed differences for these larger weights and what we can do about it and how we should proceed going forward as breeders. So are we changing efficiency through structure for growth? This is a slide of Larry Cundis that I stole from him. Basically, I think from a museum. Anyway, it's a good look at what's happened over time to mature weight overall in these cycle 7 breeds, these larger beef cattle breeds. You can see if we look at cycle 1 and 2 data relative right now, the British breeds were the smallest mature weight, and this was sort of a 5-year-old mature weight at that time. We have our classic 1,000-pound cow that must eat about 780 pounds of dried harvested forage per year and gets an animal unit, I believe. That's what we have right here. And then basically the continental breeds that were the exotics at the time are a little bit bigger, a fair bit bigger at the time percentage-wise, but that's where we were at. And based on cycle 7 data then, an evaluation of cycle 7 data, remember those are both sampled in the 90s, and the calves are born 99 and 2000, we see after those cows ended up being about 5 years old that the British breeds have caught up with a vengeance, okay, in terms of their mature weight. And what the implications are completely on that in terms of energetics, I don't know. I know the composition of gain is probably not the same between all those breeds. There's more lean gain in some of the continentals still than some of the British breeds, but if you just take the standard energetics equations that we use in nutrition today and take birth body weight to the 3/4 power, we see we've got a maintenance energy difference from now until then. Okay. So I'm curious if that was just a function, what was the terms, how we messed things up in the 40s and 50s, and how, I can't remember what the term was this morning, but how we messed things up as breeders in the 80s and 90s again to go too far the other way, or 70s and 80s again. And so are we seeing relics of that selection and that somewhat showering selection in that late sample of the 90s, or are we actually moving into something where we definitely have these higher mature weight cattle? So unfortunately, in new GPE, as I said, we just started in 2007. We don't have many 5-year-old cows yet, just a few. The oldest are 5.5 years right now. But we can look at what their weights were at a year and a half and 2.5 years. That's when they're palpated in the fall, or palpated after fall breeding in the spring. And decide if the weights do seem to be going up on those relative to that cycle 7 sample. And that's basically what I did right here. And if we look at year and a half weights, we do see in the cycle 7 breeds that some of those weights If this is a redirect weighting of the breed differences from cycle 7, and this is where they're at more on the new cycle right now, the new continuous GPE right now, we do see that we're close at a year and a half to what those mature weights were in the early 70s. Okay, now there's other factors, environmental factors, and what cows are being mated to and so forth, there's some moderation here. The standard errors on this are relatively high. They're around 40 pounds, so I can't say a lot of these are statistically significant from each other necessarily, but as a group, we certainly have some as groups that are smaller in general compared to groups that are larger, a little under 40 pounds, but not too far off. We do see some breeds that seem to be moderating their growth. It's probably because they haven't selected as hard for yearling weight, and they may, as a result, not have as large a mature weight based on projecting up from a year and a half. And we actually see some of those seem to hold on if we look at the weights at 2.5 years of age, which is the next one I felt like I sort of had enough data to start to play with anyway. But what is interesting, I these are all within error, but maybe some of the breeds are moderating, so maybe some of them have gotten bigger since cycle 7. I wouldn't say I see a definite trend towards reduced mature weight as what some of the argument may have been based on growth from the show cattle. So I think we're getting bigger. We have to think about it and deal with what that means for our industry today and what that means in terms of use of breed resources towards what we want to have for maternal lines and so forth. So there's a lot to consider here. We'll keep updating this in future years till we start to get more 5-year-old data, but I do want to bring this up just for people to think about where we're going. Don?
Larry, what's your selection criteria on a female baby, a replacement heifer? I mean, are there any considerations on size, or do they all go back in?
I'm trying to look and see if our boss is here, but he's not. Some ways it's as many females as possible right now, Don, because we're trying to grade up. So we don't have a lot of replacement female candidates we're throwing away, honestly, right now. We AI most of our females that are eligible. We let them be open once as heifers, partly from a data standpoint, partly because we need to keep the heifer development going right now, mostly from a data standpoint, though. And the only things that we don't keep as heifers generally are some cleanups that we usually clean up to a Cavanese type of bull right now. Otherwise, we've got about everything we're keeping. So there's not a lot of criteria. And I think as a research institution, we want to be careful about using too much criteria. We want to be pretty representative of the bulls that we have from AI. So. Okay. So some bulls may be moderated. Like I said, we're within errors here, so moderation is pretty relative. It's not significant right now from a statistical standpoint. Others are larger than they were in cycle 7, at least for these two time points. There seems to be some real opportunities for breed complementarity in some of the breeds that probably haven't been used as much and probably haven't had as much genetic trend. Again, I said this before, and you're going to see these slides when Shauna posts them on the website, but these are preliminary. Use it as such. I'd be happy to discuss this if further, both sets of results. My thoughts right now, I think we've got a demonstrated need for continued research for breed differences. Actually, I thought it was kind of funny when Dave Daly was saying this is never going to be done again, and I'm like one of the three scientists that's sort of trying to do this again at the Menlo Research Center. we're still trying to make sure that we have relevant work come out of this. We've got all these genomic and sequencing and so forth objectives, but this makes a great population for that too. And we do think it's important to make sure we're getting this data out there for people to use and try to make decisions on. We're exploring options to improve the delivery of the crossbreed EPDs. I know traditionally we've only done that once a year right now, but as we get into Sally running every week with the Angus, and sorry I called you out, Sally, we're getting into multiple times per year on other breeds, we really need to make this more timely so that if bases do change, we're able to account for it quickly and people are able to use it. And we did run into that last year with the multi-breed evaluation change in their base, so we need to make sure we're staying current. All that, I guess given that, I'll go ahead and take any questions. I haven't caught us up any, but I know everybody wants to hurry to lead too, so any questions, be happy to answer.
I guess I do want to address Tom's question real briefly. Tom, any selection that we do on heifers is for management purposes? So, I mean, if we're culling open heifers, it's just because we can't afford to keep them around forever, and that actually wouldn't give us the best reflection on our genetic evaluation anyway. But it's deliberately an unselected population. So the objective of the population is to represent as best we can what you as breeders and AI companies, et cetera, are producing as germplasm for the industry. We're not trying to take that germplasm in one direction or the other.